don't make that, then I switch my flight and I'll be right back at it by the end of the night.
2:30 to 4 Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. We venture off to the phone lines. He hops on once a week. We're always appreciative for his time. Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune with us. Find his podcast network at mnspn.com. As always, this is brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. Jim, thanks as always. How was London, and was the game experience attending an NFL game there in that environment, was it different from what you're accustomed to consuming here in the States?
Yes and no. I covered the Vikings game against the Steelers at Wembley in 2013, and that felt really different. I think it was, Wembley is a real, it feels like a state-of-the-art place. It feels like, U.S. Bank Stadium hadn't been built by that point, so it was one of the best stadiums I'd ever been in. It feels big. It feels international. It feels kind of, to use their word, posh. And that was a really cool experience. Twickenham is more like going to Lambeau Field than U.S. Bank Stadium. It's kind of a cool, old-school stadium, not a lot of amenities, in an old neighborhood with a lot of quaint houses around it. So I thought it was cool from that perspective, but the stadium is nothing special. You know, the only thing I would say it was great about the stadium is it's just that it felt like you're right on top of the field, which is a good thing. It felt almost like the Cleveland Browns Stadium, not fancy, but fine. And it was my third trip to London this decade. It is an amazing city.
Vikings, of course, took out the Cleveland Browns. Final score was 33-16. Who had the better touchdown celebration in Jim Suhan's eyes? Was it Adam Thielen sliding forward on his knees, as we see regularly as a celebration in soccer? Was it Jerick McKinnon imitating driving a vehicle sitting on the right side?
I liked both of them. I mean, if they're going to be celebrations, there are two good kinds of celebrations in sports. One is just a spontaneous reaction, just a natural spontaneous reaction. Well, I guess three. One is, kind of a purely natural reaction that isn't rehearsed. Two is when somebody goes immediately to celebrate with their teammates instead of acting like it's all about them. And the third is, if you're clever, if you can make me laugh. It's very subjective, I know. But if you make me laugh, I'm okay with it. If it doesn't make me laugh, then please don't waste my time. I thought Thielen's was great because it was based on him going to an Arsenal game on Saturday, and he wore an Arsenal shirt before and after the game. I thought that was pretty cool. I give McKinnon credit for doing the other side, driving on the left side thing too. They're actually both pretty good, but I like Thielen's a little bit more.
Jim Suhan, our guest today here on the Blitz. Find his work in the Star Tribune podcast network at mnspn.com. Brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. This segment, as always, you had a really fascinating article in the Star Tribune the other day, and it's interesting that, like, hey, the Vikings are 6-2, and when most bring up the successes of the offense to this point, they talk about the offensive line, Adam Thielen, Jerick McKinnon surge, and rightfully so. Your article highlighted Pat Shurmur, though, correct?
Yeah, and to me, when you look at a group of players who are all overachieving, the offensive line is better than we thought it would be. Case Keenum is better than we thought he would be. Thielen is better than we thought he would be. McKinnon's having a much better year than he did last year. Latavius Murray has been a disappointment in general, but the one time they really featured him, he had a big game himself. They've won with Diggs out. They've won with Dalvin Cook out. They've won with Bradford out. They've won, obviously, with Bridgewater out. They've had some injuries on the offensive line, and they survived them. To me, when everybody's outperforming expectations, that's when I really look to the coach. And I think Pat Shurmur has been excellent. I thought last year he came in under very difficult circumstances with basically no offensive line, no running game, and created the only offense he really could with what he was working with, which is have Bradford get rid of the ball quickly before he gets killed. And Bradford ends up with an NFL record passing, completion percentage. This year, with a full offseason, able to work with people, he has found a way to get a running game going that I'm not sure we really expected. And all three of his backs have had big games when asked. He's had big receiving games from Thielen, from Diggs, from Rudolph. To me, when everything's working, you do have to look at the coach.
You brought up many intriguing points within that article. One that stood out to me is when you brought up, I'm slightly paraphrasing, but you said if someone had told you in 2016 that the Vikings would be 6-2 in 2017, relying on Keenum, McKinnon, and Adam Thielen, you wouldn't believe them, yet here they are. And I know I asked this a couple weeks back, but if I didn't give you any of those details, Jim, or any of those circumstances, and I just told you the Vikings can be 6-2 at the bye week this year, everyone signs up for that, right?
Yes, and I think I picked this team to win 10 or 11 games, depending on when I was asked. And I thought that they would win because of Shurmur having a full offseason with Bradford, because I thought Bradford was going to have a big year, because I thought Dalvin Cook was going to have a big year, and because I thought Danielle Hunter was going to have a big year. And Bradford's out, Cook's out, Hunter has – I think Hunter's played pretty well, but he hasn't been as spectacular as I would have expected. And yet, here they are, 6-2. Now, part of it, you know, context matters. Who you play matters. They've played a succession of struggling or inexperienced quarterbacks. Now it gets real. Now they're coming out of the bye week with quarterback decisions of their own, but they're also going to face a stretch of quarterbacks who are much more challenging. Now we'll see how this defense performs and if the offense can keep up with a good quarterback.
Always enjoy his time with us on the program. He is Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune. Find his podcast network, MNSPN.com. Great stuff, great content there with many different voices, always chiming in on different programs. This segment brought to you, as always, by Greenlee Golf Course. You just alluded to it, brought it up, so we'll dive into it. All signs point to Teddy Bridgewater being put on the active roster. So I ask you, what's the move at quarterback heading into Washington in a little over a week?
Just did a podcast with Tim Yotter of Viking Update about this very subject, and I also talked about it on Suhan Uncensored, my personal show on the network. And we got into it, and one thing I said to Tim was, you know, so often in sports debates, it's kind of I'm right, you're wrong, and we go back and forth. I don't really disagree with anything I've seen written or said about this debate. It's like my default position is that when Teddy is absolutely ready, he's your starting quarterback. You know, he was a starter by merit before he got hurt. If you can get him up to the point where you think he's really ready to step in and play at an NFL level, great. Maybe that takes giving him some first-team snaps over a number of weeks. Maybe it takes him getting into a game in a garbage situation. I don't know what it takes, but my default position is get Bridgewater in there when the time is right. He gives you a better chance to win playoff games, and that is the goal. But, you know, as much as I prefer Bridgewater over Keenum, Keenum has done the job. I'm not sure I trust him yet, but I'm not sure he deserves to be pushed out too quickly either. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the timetable is going to be. I do think they're going to activate Bridgewater next week, and I think how Bridgewater performs in practice will probably determine just how quickly he gets back in the lineup.
Do you get the sense, this might be a foolish question for me to ask, but I want to ask it anyways because I have, I guess, maybe some uncertainty with it, but do you get the sense that Mike Zimmer, A, wants to give the chance to Teddy to be the starting quarterback again, and then B, do the Vikings still envision him as their franchise quarterback?
I think yes and yes. I think Zimmer, and it was really interesting in the post-game press conference in London when Zimmer started talking about Bridgewater, you know, this is a guy who hates to talk about injuries. He hates to talk about anything that he views as controversial. And here he was standing on at the podium with a 6-2 team where the quarterback has basically gone 5-2, saying, and the tone of his voice was, man, I can't wait to get Bridgewater back out there. I mean, Bridgewater is his quarterback. You know, Bradford was a fallback position. Keenum is a backup quarterback, you know, by trade. Zimmer wants Bridgewater out there.
We kind of are on the same page. We've mentioned it in recent weeks, too, that we both think Teddy gives you the better or the best chance to win at the quarterback spot. And when we look across the landscape of the NFC, I've mentioned to you the last couple of times, you've mentioned it to me, the NFC just kind of seems like it's wide open. It would appear for now, at least, that Philadelphia perhaps is in a tier all by themselves. Just for now, that can, of course, change. How far behind, Jim, to you are the teams like the Seahawks or the Vikings or the Rams? How far are they behind Philadelphia? Because I don't look at this Eagles team as something that's like, man, they're going to be impossible to beat in January. I don't see them as that sort of team, despite how well they have looked.
I don't think there's a team in the NFL that looks impossible to beat right now. And I think you have the right team. I think the Eagles have earned the right to be considered a half step above the rest of the conference. You know, Wentz is playing great. He had an excellent October. Now they just got Jay Ajayi. who gives them another power back. They're missing, you know, they just had a key offensive line injury, which does cause concern. They can play defense. They can run the ball. They can throw the ball. They can throw the ball deep. They seem to be well coached. I'm not sure I'd see them as, you know, I wouldn't want to have to spend my own money betting on them to win the Super Bowl. I think there are too many other factors. I will also say that I think Seattle is figuring it out. I really trust Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll to figure it out as they go. By the way, check out Russell Wilson imitating Pete Carroll for Halloween. If you get a chance to see that, that's brilliant. I think the Saints have turned it on. They're playing good defense. They're running the ball well. I think they're really interesting. And, you know, the Vikings, I think their high end is limited by their quarterback situation. And if Bridgewater comes back and plays really well, then they could end up being somewhat of a favorite.
Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune with us this afternoon. Podcast Network, type it in, mnspn.com, brought to you as always by Greenlee Golf Course. Let's switch it up a little bit to the hardwood. The Timberwolves have started to piece it together. I was looking through last year and this year early on in the schedule because I remember how many heartbreaking losses the Wolves endured and went through last year where they were blowing 15-point leads or a dozen-point lead in the fourth quarter. And one thing that stood out to me last year, the Wolves' first three losses were by 4 points, 3 points, and 3 points. This year, Jim, their first four wins were by 3 points, 2 points, three, and three. Young guys like Towns and Wiggins, of course, are figuring it out, but how much of it as well is they added vets like Teague, like Crawford, Butler, and Gibson, and they have played integral parts down the stretch run of some of these close wins this year?
Well, if you want to oversimplify it, you have to say that this is all Jimmy Butler. It's Jimmy Butler. They're 5-1 when he plays. They've won close games when he's played. Last night you saw Wiggins make a couple beautiful shots, beautiful, very difficult shots, running one-handers in the lane over seven-footers. But when we saw Wiggins try to close out games last year, it often didn't work out very well. You know, he looks much more comfortable not having to take the shot, but being able to take the shot. Jimmy Butler, you know, Pelicans came back, were making a game of it in the last minutes. Butler comes down the wing, ball fakes, gets a guy in the air, draws the foul, and then is strong enough and patient enough to get off an awkward shot that goes in. That three-point play basically wins them the game. That combined with some good defense down the stretch. I mean, Butler is just the perfect fit here. I know a lot of people were pained by the fact they had to give up Zach LaVine. I understand he's a great talent. He's a nice kid. But this is exactly what they needed. They needed Jimmy Butler, and he's already delivering.
You mentioned the late game heroics by Butler last night. The Wolves went on to win by 6 against the Pelicans. Karl Anthony Towns on the flip side got in foul trouble very early on. Didn't foul out. He finished with 5 fouls, but only had 2 points. So he has 2 points. He's 1 of 7 from the field. And I'm looking at that thinking, Jim, like a win like that last year for the Wolves does not exist, where Karl Anthony Towns gets in foul trouble, still plays a large chunk of the game, but only provides 2 points, right? Like a win like that last year, it just doesn't exist.
Right, and Towns is an interesting case because he is an amazing producer. He's already up among the best of all time at his stage of his career for double-doubles, points, and rebounds. He's an amazing producer. He's an amazing talent. And yet, he doesn't play, and he can block shots, but he's not a good defender. And the fact that he isn't their only avenue to victory is a big deal. He has a long way to go. He got exposed defensively last night by two very good young 7-foot type offensive players. He needs to get better at defense for this team if this team's going to be really special down the road. But you know, now he isn't the only, you know, he and Wiggins aren't the only ways that you can win. They don't have to have massive games. They just need to play decent basketball.
We'll finish up with a couple of Twins notes. Wanted to pick your brain, get your thoughts on some things. The World Series, of course, wrapped up last night. Astros take out the Dodgers in Game 7. Based off what you saw in that series, Jim, and how it unfolded, how does it have you feeling about the Twins and their potential future as they want to take steps forward with the franchise?
Well, I can't remember if I wrote it, tweeted it, talked about it on a radio or a podcast. I remember saying a handful of years ago, watch out. Twins, Cubs, Astros. These, you know, back then, those three franchises were all laughing stocks. And I said, watch out. These three teams are all going to be really good, and I think you're going to see some World Series championships between the three. Now, the Cubs win it last year. Astros win it this year. The Twins, I think, have similar position-playing talent to those two franchises. If Sano does what he's supposed to do, if Buxton does what he's supposed to do, I think they're right there in that ilk. And You know, the Cubs went out and got free agent pitching, spent a lot of money, and that put them over the top. The Astros developed Keuchel, made some good trades, bring in Verlander. That put them over the top. But the commonality is that they both developed their own best young position players, and those guys are good enough to support a championship. And Buxton Sanoe should be of that ilk.
We saw really good pitching because you mentioned the Twins' young offense in that core, especially you look in the outfield left-right with Rosario, Buxton, and Kepler, and Sanoe, Polanco. It goes on. But we saw good pitching really struggle at times throughout this series between the Dodgers and the Astros, which had me feeling all right because I really liked the core of this Twins' offense. But on the flip side of that, we saw good pitching, borderline great pitching from Clayton Kershaw, Yu Darvish, and Keuchel, and they all flopped at different junctures throughout this best-of-seven series. And I look around, and the Twins don't have a Keuchel or a Kershaw or a Darvish. So is pitching still the top priority this offseason for Minnesota?
It's absolutely the top priority. I think, and this is something I talk about with Smalley on the podcast, we both think they need a legitimate closer just to let everybody else settle into an easier role. And if you have a legitimate closer on this team, some of these young arms, including some that we haven't even seen in the big leagues yet, they might have the makings of a good, deep bullpen. I'm just not sure they want everybody in the roles that they're currently in. And then they probably need, you know, if not an ace, another good innings provider. Here's the interesting thing. The Astros have had dominant pitching in the past. They won the World Series this year with the 11th-ranked team ERA in Major League Baseball, which is not bad, but it's not great. Dodgers had the second best. You know, the Yankees were way up there. So it tells you that they're just as much as we all want to have a very clear blueprint of what it takes to win a championship, you never really know. I mean, Keuchel was hurt part of the year. He only had 23 starts. Keuchel had a 5.23 ERA in the World Series. They didn't win the World Series only because of Dallas Keuchel and his brilliance. They won because they outslugged another team that had good pitching. So, you know, we all want to see the Twins improve their pitching. They have to improve their pitching, but they might not be as far away as we think they are.
We'll leave on this. The Twins, of course, hired a pitching coach around a week ago. Garvin Alston will be the dude in charge. Sort of an off-the-path name, wasn't a flashy hire, wasn't one that many were jumping for joy over just because there's some unknown with Alston. And I actually love the hire because, Jim, for me, if anything, it probably tells me that Falvey and Levine just know a lot of things that maybe we don't with this hire.
Well, the interesting thing about him, and I'm not one to you know criticize a hire because I hadn't heard the name a whole lot before. The interesting thing about him is he has worked in pitching rehab before, and that I think is one of the next great frontiers in baseball. Now that everybody's using analytics in probably about the same way, how do you get an edge? Well, if you can reduce pitcher injury or reduce the amount of time it takes to rehabilitate an injured pitcher, or prevent, if you can find a way to prevent pitcher injuries, that might be the next frontier as far as, you know, gaining advantage. So, I have no idea if this is going to be good or not, but I like the idea behind the hire.
Find his work in the Star Tribune Podcast Network at MNSPN.com. Jim, as always, thank you. Thank you for the time.
Hey, thanks, Mitch.
We'll build on to this, continue on with the Twins offseason talk coming up next.